Welcome along to the 100th episode of LOI Weekly, the 21st of Season 3, and we're celebrating this, which we'll tell you about shortly, with a few gifts. It's myself, Johnny Ward, Daniel McDonald, alongside Keith Andrews and Kevin Kilbane, both of whom are coming in very shortly. We're on Podcast Republic, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, at LOI Weekly on Twitter. As part of our celebration, we will have a special prize of, we can't say the prize, can we? 2 Air Sport box tickets to Ireland and Switzerland. For the best review on iTunes, hell of a prize. That's on Apple Podcasts. Referencing your favorite moment or moments over the 100th, over the 100 episodes, and we'll announce the winner on Twitter this Friday. Not a bad prize, Dan.
Yeah. What was your favorite moment of the 100 episodes, be John?
The start. Why? The promise that was ultimately unfulfilled. You know.
Really?
When I know. No. Just
you'll be getting the 2 tickets anyway.
No. I think I should get the prize. Don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the fact that we're still here is at least something
100,
anyway.
100 not out. Yeah.
100 not out, yeah.
Yeah, although we were out last night. After your presenting debut, John.
Yeah.
That was a momentous moment, presenting on Air Sport.
Yeah, fair play to Air Sport for giving me the chance, but I have to say the team you're working with are just class. Like, you don't feel anyway out of place because they're just so good to deal with, from Con Murphy to Pat to just the two lads I was with. And and fairness is
and all the production staff
and all the production staff. No, it was there. You're obviously a bit raw doing something like that. It was just a shame that the game was so flat.
Yeah.
You know, you just think of, I watched the game from the gantry, which I'd never done before. Brilliant view of the game, and you're looking at the stand. And I'd say for the Bowes Rovers game when Mandrew scored, it must have been an amazing buzz. What just wasn't last night. It was very flat.
Now,
and it was a bad game.
Now, these Monday games have
disaster.
You know, it's a recurring theme. Anyone who listens to this regularly doesn't need to hear the same debate, the same discussion again. But like, when you have two teams there last night who on Friday, like, one went to Cork and won 4-1. One had the exhilaration of a 93rd minute winner down in Waterford. It's just hard to lift it 3 days later. You know, I was there last night, maybe a couple of people who don't necessarily always go regularly. And like, there's no Mandrew. And I know he was injured, but I'm thinking, you know, the fixture schedule is contributing to these injuries, or maybe just not quite resting lads, but, you know, just not overdoing it with lads sitting out a few games and so on. So, it's not great value entertainment for people, really. But, you know, there we go. I mean, the flip side of that is, I mean, I was in Tala on Friday for what was a great occasion, I guess. Not necessarily like a classic game, but
an absorbing game.
It was absorbing, probably because of the teams involved, because of the setting. You know, it was like 5,000 people there. It really mattered. It meant something. You had storylines and drama and discussion and talking points, and maybe a lot of things that you didn't have from last night. But yeah, and also a decisive step. I actually think one of my favourite moments across the 100 episodes is John's predictions.
They're gone now anyway, aren't they?
We've moved on from
here's
beyond
one
them.
For you. Is
because last Friday night, Tala, we did have a banner in the away section,
yeah,
which might possibly have aimed roughly in your direction.
Yeah.
That's when you've really made it as an influencer, John. You always try and move on from this discussion.
Is it a slightly disappointing Rovers crowd at that game when you think Dundalk had a huge crowd? Like, Rovers, like, with such a big fan base in terms of traditional fan base for a massive game. Say if there were 3,500 Rovers fans at that game, give or take.
I know there was more than
4.
That because
a lot of neutrals.
I think there was, okay, yeah. There was neutrals there. But
what is the Rovers fan base? I'm just wondering, because that was a huge game. Like, that was like a game to decide their season in some respects. You think there should be a beautiful night of football Friday night. Granted, it was on TV, but do you think they should not have like more fans than that for a game of that magnitude? Cork would have had, say, 7,000-8,000 at that game.
Yeah,
it's just interesting. I don't know what the Rovers fan base actually is, because they've moved around so much and they've so many dormant fans.
Yeah, that's a fair. I actually don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of people. I think who just go to Tala. I know a couple of people who live in the sort of, you know, South Dublin area. I know we say Tala's hard to get there, but there are more people who might drive there. Like, people live in sort of Ballyboden and that neck of the woods who would go along casually to Tala. But I guess, I don't know what their fan base is like. You know, you look at games this season against, say, Derry, actually early in the season, and a couple of games where their crowds have actually still been pretty good without necessarily like a monster travelling support.
They're playing great football as well. Like, they're very enjoyable to watch.
I would have thought, I don't know. I mean, I haven't thought about it in detail. I've gone to a couple of games in Tala not working, and actually one thing that strikes me is you sort of wander around the ground a bit, and there is like like a lot of people there with their kids, or a lot of like people not born in Ireland as well, who definitely go along to that. I suppose they count as Rovers fans now if you go regularly enough. They're the casual floating fans. But I don't know, like there was 5,000 people there, around 900 travelling fans. I think they would have liked to have more away fans, but I think there was restrictions placed on that. It might have been Gardaí or maybe whatever it happened. So you could have had more people in the ground then, you know, and you're not that. I think 5 ain't bad, you know.
I wonder how ideal Talla is in terms of location.
Compared
to Dalymount, for example. Now, they didn't have an option of a site in the middle of the city centre. But it probably does hold them back a bit that they're in Dublin 24 or whatever.
It's just a different demographic to Dalymount. Mm. What they can't necessarily attract is, you know, Bowes can get people who are in Dublin for the weekend who, like, see 10 minutes from the city centre, go to the match and have a few drinks and stuff. It's hard to, like, go to Talla and have a few pints. Like, it's not necessarily that Friday night experience because of the distance. That's what holds them back. But the flip side of that is a lot of families and stuff, you know, there's good car parking facilities around. You know, there's a lot of people who on a summer's evening last week, I know from speaking to people who were very much like, this was something they were going to do. It was a good thing to bring the kids to. A good facility, a safe facility, you know, with all the right facilities that you need.
Obviously, they heard Vinnie Perk being abused apparently on Friday night. Something.
Yeah,
what did you make of that actually? Because
I don't know. I wasn't working. I wasn't working at the game, so I wasn't in the press box. And it seemed to be a bit of activity that was going on around that area. I don't take a po-faced approach to this stuff. Like, you know, we need a bit of rivalry and a bit of spice. I mean, Stephen Bradley had a couple of comments afterwards that have provoked debate, you know, suggesting that Sean Gannon was Dundalk's only threat. I'm not sure that he meant it in the way that it came across, suggesting that he was their only threat in discussions before the game. I mean, during the game, I think Gannon was possibly, you know, the major Dundalk threat, and that's fair enough. But
he got man of the match again to
suggest that he beforehand, I'm not sure if it meant to come across that way. And obviously, Bradley, in the aftermath of a game, you know, he's hurting, because actually we've had debates in recent weeks about Rovers. Are they all that, you know? And actually, you look at them on Friday and you would think, yeah, actually, they are a proper side now that's really improved this year. There is no doubt about that. Yet at the same time, the sum total is
they lost at home to
1 point from 6 games against your two rivals.
And they drew against Derry at home in their last game.
Yeah. And I think, you know,
Unfortunately, a lot of it goes down to Aaron Green just not scoring goals. Yeah,
but I think the ingredients of a title winning team is that you have that clinical, you know, cutthroat approach, that ability to win games in a manner that maybe you shouldn't, you know, and that's why the Knock weren't great on Friday at all. And like we were talking about, you know, they've won 13 and 14 now. I do still feel that like they can be better than what they've been.
They've
won 13 and 14.
Mm-hmm. One thing on Sean Gannon,
let's finish my point. Yeah. Just that it will be slightly worrying from the debate, from the perspective of the wider league debate, that like that, you know, Dundalk can play purely by their standards away to the next best team in the league and still win. You know, like you would like to think that almost a performance like that would be punished if there was a sufficient quality of team challenging them. And Rovers just didn't do that. And I think that I think Rovers will pick up a lot of points between now and the end of the season. So Friday, I think, will probably come back and haunt them.
I do have sympathy for Rovers in that when they played Bowes and Talla earlier in the season, they hit the crossbar at nil all. And the game Friday night, hit the crossbar at nil all. Gary Rogers, to my mind, should have been sent off. You could argue now that the case that Trevor Clarkson...
Yeah, we're not going to go around about that.
But Rovers, big decisions have consistently gone against Rovers in these big games. But just on Sean Gannon...
I wouldn't build that narrative too much. Like, they've had some decisions have gone against them.
I don't know.
The Dundalk should have had a penalty in the 90th minute in Talla in the nil-all early on in the season. It was a stonewall penalty. Like, it was just a really bad decision, you know. And on Friday night, there was questionable decisions early on too. I see what you're saying, but like some of the other decisions that have gone against Rovers, there was self-inflicted mistakes.
All the
red
cards against Bowes were probably debatable. All the red cards, they three.
Yeah,
red cards,
but I don't think they've been robbed this year. You know, I don't think they've been robbed. You'd want to have attended every one of their games and, you know, conducted analysis of every decision in every game. I don't know. I don't think that that's like I would hope that they're not thinking that way in terms of analysing their season so far.
I think Rovers will come out of that game on Friday and say, okay, if we won this game, we'd fancy ourselves, but let's just see where we're at. We're going into Europe now, and they'd be very confident of doing something in Europe. They played so well. Like, they were much the better team for much of the game, but just getting back to Sean Gannon, I've never seen a guy grow into his role in a team like he has. He was remonstrating with his teammates several times, demanding more from them, and then he gets the crucial goal as well. And for a right back, like, I think we're only now appreciating what a, and you were saying to me last night, could end up being like the most record league winner in Ireland potentially.
Well, he's got a chance. I mean, I would suggest that maybe his time to go overseas might have passed, although actually
I doubt he cares.
In some respects, I think they look at aid. Like, I think there's a bit of interest now. Say, I think AFC Wimbledon are interested in Andy Lyons now, for example. And because he's 18, 19, I think Lyons got a great chance of being a really good player. But naturally, his age is a big factor. But clubs might look at Gannon and go, well, you know, he's 28 this year, I think. But actually, I think he would provide a ready-made service that would be good enough for teams at a good level. But notwithstanding that, you are right. He's on six league wins at the moment. I think you could debate over the first one at Rovers. I think he made one appearance. I'm not sure if that really counts, but the other five certainly count. If he gets another one this year, I think seven is the record. And you would think, you know, if he spends the next 4 or 5 years with Dundalk, are they going to win two or three leagues in that time? I would say on budget, that's probably a fair enough estimation of what he could do. So
is the league over?
I don't think it's completely over.
Derry have to get something off Dundalk on Friday.
I just find it hard to see. I mean, I suppose Dundalk either have to lose three, you know, and that's and that scenario, that's Rovers winning every game, like every match, right? So you think, can Dundalk lose three, draw a couple of games? But Rovers need a perfect run. I think Rovers have lost six games now. It's very hard to win, to win a league, you know, losing any more than that. And Dundalk have lost twice.
That was early in the season.
They've lost twice. Mm. You know, Rovers have to win an Oriel. That's an absolute cert, you know, in the sense that I don't see any permutation where they can win it without taking control of that match themselves.
And
that's the problem. They haven't shaped it. Like, they're looking for snookers now. You know, I mean, they're looking on favours.
A lot of snookers.
The best scenario for Rovers now is that Dundalk actually, in a strange way, do well in Europe.
Oh, definitely.
If they do well in Europe, then there's a possible ability there to, and you're presuming that Rovers go out, and I'm not saying that, I'm assuming that, but you have a chance to close the gap, and then they have games in hand, and then there's a fixture congestion. But like,
Dundalk,
unfortunately, like, the one thing I would say about that, John, sorry, is that, you know, as the season goes on, like, there's a lot of big issues here are being resolved. Europe is the one interesting race. You'd be a bit worried that in the last third of the season you're going to have a lot of teams with nothing really to play for at times.
Well, at the moment, you look at the table now, a lot of things look like they're almost preordained. A lot of things, like Europe, almost looks like you could nearly predict confidently enough the top
four. I think Europe is the one that's up for grabs. Because
the way Pats are playing, they're going to struggle to catch Derry.
Yeah, but I think Europe is the one thing. Please, John, we need to talk about it. We need to do 100, you know, 10 more pots, 15 more pots this year. Europe is the one that we have a chance, because you don't know who's going to win the cup.
Like, UCD are going to make signings as well, and I think they're not without hope at all of catching Harps if they improve. I know things are bad, but if they bring players in. Just one thing on UCD, interest from Colly O'Neill. He wouldn't shake hands with Harry Kenny after the game on Friday night, and I queried it and I found his programme notes. He basically accused Pats of tapping up one of his players and doing it completely incorrectly, and he wouldn't shake hands with him after the game, which I thought was quite interesting. But obviously he's reacted from the defeat last night. We'll get through the results quickly now by basically saying I think they're signing two players, because
Jack Keeney and Liam Carrigan from Sligo are the two players that they're looking to bring in. So
just needs a bit of experience. And in fairness, like I hope for UCD, I hope for the sake of the league, that UCD don't completely fall away, because we want
to... Well, my point is that, if you want Dundalk to drop points, you need teams with something to play for.
Absolutely.
I think there's a possibility that you could have teams later in the season that the cup becomes their priority and the leagues don't. And in that case, there's not a chance Dundalk are going to drop the points.
Last question on this. Who, in terms of Dundalk and Rovers going into Europe, who goes in kind of in better nick at the moment? Dundalk?
Dundalk do. I mean, they're still... I mean, Riga are decent, but Dundalk are seeded and they're guaranteed a tie even if they lose. Like, so they have a much better year, even though their Europa League parachute is a nightmare. Mm. They're Benson's coming back, McGrath's coming back. You know, they've brought in Andy Boyle. I mean, I'm excited to see how Rovers do, and bring
I think the two of them will.
Yeah, I think they've.
Funny thing about the Dundalk, Stephen O'Donnell went to watch the opponents again on Sunday, and he's like, "Now we'll get them playing away from home." And the team they were playing ended up moving the game to the home ground of Riga, so ended up basically they're playing the bottom team in the table.
It's a nine-team division.
Yeah, and these lads are bottom, and they won. I don't. They won 3 or 4
nil.
But it was just. It was almost like a wasted trip.
We debate. We debate structures and all that here. There's a nine-team league there. It looks like an idiosyncratic league, to say the least. Looks bang at a first division about it.
Friday night, anyway, UCD nil, Pats 1, Waterford 1, Bows 2. What a night from Michael Barker. Cork 1, Derry 4, Harps 2, Sligo nil, Rovers nil, Dundalk 1. Last night, Dundalk 3, Waterford nil, Pats nil, Rovers 2, Sligo 5, UCD 1, and nil all between Bows and Derry and Harps and Cork.
And do the first division now as well.
We want to do the first division now?
Yes.
We had... What do we have? 5 games. Cabinteely 2. Low scoring round of games, actually. Cabinteely 2, Wexford 0. Drogheda 1, Bray 0. Huge win for the Drogs. Bray down to 6th now, but still very much in the hunt.
Yeah, they've started rocking, yeah.
Cowie United 1, Athlone Town 1.
I think a recurring theme of the 100 episodes is Galway United-based disappointment.
Yeah, but like...
Apart from the Saudi optimism and then disappointment. The graph of Galway United across the 100 episodes would be... low. It's like that one. You know, it's the very bottom of the list. Like low, 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 low. And then it shoots up for Saudi. And there's like 3 weeks of Saudi hope. And then plummets down
again. I spoke to Luke Homer, obviously, who's the main backer of the club at the Curragh. And I still hope that they're very much committed to the club going forward. It's just very disappointing.
The problem is, like, you end up writing off this season. And that's...
Totally.
That's
it's already written off. And that's... The lucky thing is the Galway budget is quite low. So.
Limerick nil, Shelburne 1.
Missed penalty for Limerick
as
well.
Not a great penalty effort. And Longford 1, Cove 0.
Cove 0. So before we bring the lads in, let's just hear from Keith Long. He was talking to Air Sports Shane Dawson, whose name I actually forgot in a complete brain freeze last night. But Shane, another valuable member of the Air team, he was speaking to Keith. One thing actually as well I should mention, the rapport the managers showed with the guys beforehand was great and very, very willing to give interviews. And I think there's really appreciation among the kind of League of Ireland personnel that Air is good for the league and really gives it the proper sort of exposure. But Keith and Declan Devine were both very much of the opinion afterwards that something is very, very wrong in the state of the League of Ireland fixture list.
You know, I think as a league, we need to start showing a little bit more respect to the players. We can't continue to ask our players to play Friday, Monday, but it's down to the clubs. We need to extend out the season. We need to make our season a little bit longer, make our off-season shorter. I can understand to a certain extent why European clubs are given a free pass and maybe adjust games to allow them progress in Europe. I can understand that, but there's no reason in the world we can't extend out our season. It's a false economy, really, when you look at it. You know, playing Friday, Monday, games, gates are down, receipts are down as a result, although we've had a good crowd here tonight, you know, but, you know, you get spectacles like that. We're shorn of 8 players here tonight. You know, and our supporters come to watch their team play, and they want to see their best players playing. But injury and fatigue have you know restricted what we could do tonight, our options tonight. So I think we need to, as a league, as clubs, we need to have a look at it, and you know, definitely we need to extend out the season because we can't continue. We've had 2 weeks off, and now we're playing 3 games in a week. It doesn't make sense. Common sense is not that common. In our league at this moment in time, and we need to, you know, address these issues so we don't have spectacles like that tonight.
Do you think you can realistically bring that to the FAI, and will your voice be heard?
Well, I hope so. You know, there is an opportunity for change, obviously, as it currently stands. I think the league managers, you know, if we can get an association, we can get that up and running. If we're given a proper platform in a constructive fashion, you know, I'm not here to bash the FAI. What I've said is the league clubs need to organise themselves and, you know, extend out the season, you know, like I said, because it is a false economy. There's worry about, you know, wages and paying players' wages, but you're losing gates on Monday nights across the league, and it's something that we seriously need to consider for next year.
Hard not to disagree with Keith Long there. Another Keith Andrews and Kevin Kilbane are in. How are you, lads?
Hey, Johnny. Johnny, all good. You're right.
It's our 100th episode, lads.
100th episode. Yeah, yeah.
We wanted a really special episode, but they weren't available.
How many more appearances do we get to match Kevin Kilbane's Irish caps? Is it 20 odd more?
Oh, no. We won't. Oh, no. Let's not talk about that. 110. Keith knows more than me. Jesus.
Speaking of playing a lot of games, Kev, the point of the two managers last night was this schedule with the playing sort of Friday, Monday is killing games, and watching the highlights of Bowes on Friday night, Mandrew looked to be really, really good, and then you turn up looking forward to seeing him last night. He's not playing because he got injured or he got a knock. It just seems to be a recurring theme, and just as a footballer, particularly at, like, can you relate to what they're talking about at that type of level?
Recovery is probably the hardest part of modern day game, no matter what level you're playing. I think getting yourself up from as it would have been with us, Saturday into a Tuesday, or Tuesday then into a Saturday, it's so hard then to replicate the same performance. You say there, one lad is playing outstanding on a Friday. Can he replicate it even if he was fit on the Monday? And it's highly unlikely. That's the way that it is. And I think it's how teams prepare for that type of, say, a player is, I don't know, in great form, plays a good game. They're ready for him the next game anyway. And it's difficult then for a player to raise himself to that standard again. It is crazy, and listening to what he was saying there about the three games in, what, 7 days, 7-8 days now, whatever it is, considering they've had a break off that as well, it's
especially Derry as well. They played in Cork on Friday night. The fixtures weren't particularly kind to them, were they?
No game in 5 weeks, and then you're in Cork.
Well, I was seeing it earlier on.
Dublin in 72
hours. I saw it. Finn Harps had a fixture list earlier on this season. I think they were up and down to Dublin twice in
Friday, Monday.
And it, like, you know, basically part time, a lot of them as well. It's so difficult, I think, for the team and for the supporters to travel with them as well. It's crazy.
The level of what they have to recover. You know, the latter stages of our careers, we would have had cryotherapy chambers, like full time medical staff, full time masseurs, and it's still a stretch to get back to a level. You never quite get back to 100% after that game to go. And by the third game of the week, you're running at whatever, 60, 70.
Just say on Derry, though, like if Derry went down to Cork and then they had, I think they saved Friday night.
In the morning, didn't they?
Came back. So then they have to prepare for game Monday. So what can they do coaching-wise, shape-wise for the Bowes game?
Very little. On Sunday, so Saturday, absolutely nothing. I would suggest it was a day off. If you call getting back at 5 o'clock in the morning, a day off. Sunday, you're in probably doing some kind of walk-through shape, recovery baths, ice baths, masseurs, if they have it at their disposal. And then all they can get into them in terms of work on Bowes is probably a meeting, some video analysis.
It's stuff on the training ground, set piece and things like that, tactical stuff. That's it, isn't it?
That's the limit of it.
But as and the level we're talking about here, again, where there's really mixed level of resources in the League of Ireland. If you look at it this year, the Dock have won 13 and 14. Last year, I think they started their run around the 1st of May, 16 and 17 wins. Because they have the resources to do overnights, they have the resources. By all accounts, the as much as the front of house stuff in Oriel is still dreadful, the behind the scenes facilities apparently have really improved. So, like that's worth points across the season. It's no coincidence that at this time of the year, they seem to come
squad
to the
depth form. as well, what they have at their disposal, and players that have come back in the last few weeks and have made a big difference. They're able to utilise the bench a little bit. I think Bowes have done that well to a degree.
Well, he's
when
the
it got Friday,
rotation,
Monday,
yeah.
Some people say, well, Derry didn't make any changes. Am I right? Last night, which I was staggered with.
It's astonishing, really. Yeah.
And am I right in saying they've signed 19 players now?
Yeah, I think it could even be 20 now.
I think
Declan Devine has done an amazing job there. Yeah. They look like they've been playing together for some time and they have actually a bit of squad depth. But I went to the game, I was saying to Dan, oh, this is going to be a cracker. And he goes, well, the last time these teams played at Dalymount, the pitch was bad. It was a poor game. Pitch wasn't great last night either. It was pretty hard. And it wasn't a good game, Dan. It was just disappointing because they're two footballing sides.
It wasn't great. But I mean, I suppose, Keith, you're probably, I know you've gone to a few games this season. You're going with a different eye now. You're looking for, you know, you're looking at the team sheet, I guess, to see who meets the age criteria. Just from your perspective, what have you made of the league this season? Because, I mean, both of you, I mean, I know you both go to games regularly enough. Kev, you're living here now.
Yeah.
Neither of you played in the league, so you're probably still, you're learning aspects about it. I mean, what have you made of the sort of quality of young players you're seeing this year, the quality of games
when
you're
I was
seeing?
Away, Dan, and I never had any dodgy boxes in England like some people. So I didn't have access to a lot
Someone's
of the games.
Someone's gone very quiet there.
So it was new
to me. He was watching some Vietnamese league football this morning.
So when I came back home a couple of years ago, I started to go to games when I could. I work a lot of Friday nights in England, so obviously they're out of the equation. But since I've been back involved with the FAI and the 21s, obviously, I've had to go to more and more games. And I have to say, I've been impressed on the whole. And we were talking before we came on air here that you can tell they're being coached. You can tell the level of coaching has gone up a notch without a shadow of a doubt. It doesn't happen by fluke, the way the teams are going out. Last night, you just touched on it there. That's a deterioration in a physical aspect of the game, because they weren't able to do what they can normally do, and certainly for Bowes with the amount of injuries they have. But for me, and for my kind of selfish needs for the 21s, it's brilliant, because Bowes has been a prime example. Lads have done come home and they get thrown into an environment that they're flourishing in. So we reap the benefits of that.
Yeah, because Dundalk, I don't think of any under 21 eligible players, so they're almost not relevant for you in terms of your work. So, but Bowes obviously are probably a big part of your work, just the way things have.
Yeah, Bowes, UCD up until the last couple of weeks, the team has been decimated. But yeah, I think on the whole, I've been impressed with the different styles, the way they're trying to play. You can tell a good coach, a good manager. The team always can't carry it out, but they're trying to do the right things. It doesn't always come out. Last night being a prime example at Dalymount, because I think they were a little bit fatigued.
Well, I mean, obviously conscious that I'm not just asking you just to pick out players, because naturally you're looking at players in your work, but just the players that were in Toulon, maybe just as a reference point, because you had Darragh Leahy was over there, you had Farooj obviously missed out, but you had Liam Scales, Connor Cairns, Zach Albazetti. How did they equip themselves? I mean, I think people would have watched the games on TV. I mean, Dara was obviously very much involved. Albazetti got an injury, but just the League of Ireland players, how are they compared to maybe players that are under 23 level in England who haven't played first team football?
I think the balance is that players that are playing in England, if they're just playing 23s football and if they're just training, it depends what club they're at first and foremost. Are they training at an intensity? Because the lads in the League of Ireland are playing football. They're playing competitive football. They're training, even though it's part-time on paper, some of them, they're training 3-4 times a week. So they're up to a level. And in some cases, they're at a better level than some of the players in the under-23s in England. I think it's a fine line. The age is a delicate one where they need to be challenging themselves and they need to get out of 23s football as soon as they can to start playing senior men's competitive football like we would have had years ago in the reserves. It's not quite the same at the under-23s now in the main. Some teams are different, but those lads that you've mentioned were amazing, and they have been amazing since the first day I clapped eyes on them in January for that amateurs game we had in Home Farm. And their progression, I think some of them have kind of fed off that confidence from coming into the 21s, and it's coincided with their club form and they've relished it, rather than the other way around where they come back from England, some of them, and they kind of feel sorry for themselves and it's the end of the road, it's the end of their careers. It's far from it. They've used that as motivation to, I've hit a bit of a dip in my career, but now I want to go again.
You're saying about the level there. I just watched the under-21, the Euro under-21s there, and the level that a lot of the players are at, if I'm talking Spain, I was talking about a lot of the top...
Germany, Italy,
they're all playing regular... Bundesliga, Spanish La Liga, they're all household names essentially that were playing in that tournament. Even the English side, you've seen household names. So where are our level then in comparison to a lot of those sides, and do you feel?
Obviously you played a really good Brazil side.
Yeah. So that Brazil team,
that's the one maybe as an example.
And that 21s team now, that's what we're trying to get to in 2 years' time. So we're obviously a lot younger than that. So in the next 12, 18 months, I would anticipate a lot of our players getting into first teams and starting to establish their names. Whereas at the moment, we have high hopes for them, but they need to take that step. A lot of them at first team level, like that Brazil team that we faced in Toulon, is one of the best coach teams I've ever seen. So you just assume with the Brazilian flair,
in terms of what
the patterns of play that they played with, very different, very based in terms of horizontal lines down the pitch. They're the spine of a team, but then the left back, left sided centre midfielder, they played a 4-3-3 like a Liverpool Man City, more like a Man City with higher David Silva, De Bruyne types, and then the left side of attacking midfielder, it was just like synchronised triangles. It was phenomenal.
That must be beautiful when you see something like that. And it's like, is that something I'm going to pick up or I can learn?
So what
from?
Do you try and do then? What was your What was your discussion on the sideline
before the game? In terms of how you stop that, obviously, and you need to let the players aware of it. So you just mentioned about what you do in between those games for Derry in between. So it was similar to a degree for us. We were kind of in-house. Obviously, we had them 24/7, so obviously that's better. So you try and make them aware of that, but equally, you can't be... You have to dilute it ever so slightly, because when it's slick and when it was at its best, it was phenomenal. So we have to try and stop that, counter it, and then obviously the flip side, how do you cause them problems? But yeah, they were very impressive. And you're right, those Italians, same, the German, they're all playing first team football. One of the only ones that's playing regularly or played regularly last year for us was Darragh O'Shea. He's on loan, or was on loan, at Exeter, done very, very well. But that's, to put it into context, that was at League Two.
So
his next progression then is, can he go League One or Championship? Like the vast majority of the others, and hopefully they can.
Because we had a question about Darragh Leahy. Just, we had a couple of texts. We'll get to them across the show. But what about Darragh Leahy? How good is Darragh Leahy? If he left Bowes this winter, could he go in a Championship level?
Straight away.
I mean, I think Darragh Leahy was released by Coventry. He seemed to speak to people who knew him then. I think there was a feeling maybe he might have to physically develop a bit, or that seemed to be a discussion point. I mean, what are Darragh's qualities from what you've seen? Because he was well tested in that particular
match.
He was,
yeah. And I thought against Brazil, he was outstanding defensively against a right winger that went for 20 million. So, you know, to put it into context. So in January, we mentioned about that amateur game. He came in and he'd just been coming back from an injury. And I don't think he was trusting his body, but the development of him, so he's kind of the one I'm alluding to, and a lot of the others as well. But the way that he has relished being involved with the 21s, and it's given him that confidence. He wore the armband last night against Derry. That just shows the journey that he's been on. But I think I'm with you. Unless it's the right move to go across the water, I wouldn't be going anywhere if I was them just now, because they're full of confidence. They're playing regular football. That's not going to go anywhere. Those offers will still be there.
And they're happy, Keith. Like, if you see the Bowes made 7 signings, I was astonished at this.
Re-signings
for 2020, including Mandrew Talbot. And you're like, they're just, these lads are very happy. Yeah. And there is a kind of a Kevin's connection as well. And the point was made in the show last night, if they're Kevin's lads, they go over to England, they can come back to Kevin's kind of, partner club, we'll say, which is Bowes. And that connection works both ways then. And Kevin's lads were out on the pitch, kids at half time, and Kevin's on Twitter were like, you know, fair play to Bowes. There's a real kind of connection developing there. And Bowes just seems to be a very happy place for these lads. And they're living at home.
Yeah. It's the perfect environment for them, isn't it? Because your career in general, very, very few just go straight to the top. So there's going to be dips in the road. And a lot of them have had those, but they're finding it again, and it seems to be a really good environment for them. They're playing in the right type of way. They're clearly enjoying it, as you've just said. They're playing with a smile on their face. And when you do that, confidence comes back, and then you develop.
Kev, you've got to quite a few games this season. I mean, how do you find sort of the levels from your experience, from what you've seen? Because I know you've seen them again.
I like to get down and watch Pats when I can. It was me local club from where I used to live. So I'll just travel through the park and get down there to see them when I can. So I've seen a lot of the sides, particularly when they've come down to Richmond Park this season. So I've been over with yourselves a couple of times where I've seen Rovers a few times. Dundalk probably the side I've probably seen the least, I would think, this season. I think I've only seen them once. I've been impressed. I'm impressed when I've seen Rovers and how they play and how they're trying to play. Very good side to watch, and it'd be the same with Pats. I think what Harry Kenny's doing there, I think he's trying to get a side there that's progressive, that's trying to play football in the right way. They really change the system. It would be predominantly with three at the back.
A lot of midfielders.
It becomes a five-man midfield at times. I particularly like to view and see what Chris Forrest has been trying to do this season. I've been on to you lads as well I think he struggled in the early on this season as well when you watched him. But the last couple of games that I've seen him, certainly the last one I saw the one against Finn Harps just before that break, and very, very impressive, the best I would have seen in this season. So you're looking at lads that when they're coming back over and seeing how they progress and how mentally they're trying to get right for it. That's what it is. How are they when they're coming back home? And It's difficult when lads do come back. I think we all accept that, and we all know how hard it is for lads coming back. But I mean, I don't know, names you can throw out, any of the names.
What have you made of Jack Byrne? You've been to tell a few times.
Jack Byrne's very, very gifted footballer. I don't think he influences a game in the key areas enough. I think with his talent, I think he should be scoring and he should be creating a lot more goals. I've said it to you lads as well when we're on to you. I think he could be one of the most talented players within our international setup over the next 5 or 6 years. But is he having an influence on the team in areas where he should be influencing a game? And when I come away from watching Rovers, when I've seen them, I think, brilliant footballer. What a such a gifted player he is. But is someone actually telling him that you actually don't need to be having an influence, maybe dropping deeper? You can be a bit further forward. You can have an influence in real key areas of games where your talent, and you're going to make mistakes. It's not about having 100% pass completion on his stats every week. Mm. It's about maybe doing something, and I speak to Johnny and yourself about Kavanagh. When I watch Brandon Kavanagh, he's a risk taker. He gives the ball away. He makes mistakes. But I think he plays key passes.
That area of the pitch.
Yeah,
it's the toughest place to play in midfield is the advanced one.
Yeah,
and he can do that. Actually, you know, he's obviously young.
He was in your squad.
We had the amateurs, and then I had Brandon on their 17s as well. So very much aware of him, and I think he would have been one of the ones years ago who gets thrown to one side because of his size. Yeah. But he is working his balls off physically to get to a level, and technically. He's a smashing. Well,
it could be a Wes. You put names on people when they start to have an influence. But I saw him make his debut. I think it was his debut. Came on for about 15
Dundalk,
minutes last season. Dundalk. He
the
came on
two.
And they got battered in the game, didn't they? But he came on, and you're watching this kid, and you're thinking, wow,
I've never seen a player with technical ability like he has at that stage of his life.
Exactly.
In the League of Ireland. Sorry.
And he just played loose, Johnny, didn't he? Just came on, just went right. I'll play.
Even
loose.
On Friday, he came on and made
a
difference.
Yeah, he really did. He really did. And I think he's been training with the 19s group as well, hasn't he? Yeah. So I don't know if he'll.
Exactly, and again, where's he going to go to? But he looks the one of the finest talents in the league. Someone that you look at and you think, well, in 10 years' time, he's another one that could be having a serious influence.
Well, where are the British scouts here? I've never heard one reference to him being courted by.
His name's been mentioned. Johnny, yeah. His name's been mentioned. Yeah.
Why hasn't somebody taken a chance on?
Because he's probably at the moment they probably think, well, look, he might be better off developing over here. We can leave him a year, and then we can maybe look at him further down the line where he's played 50 games rather than actually going over it when he's raw. And it's easy then for a club to overlook him. They'll stick him with the youth team, they'll stick him with the 23s, and he won't get a look in. 2 years later, he comes back home.
Yeah.
And I think he's much better playing here because he's in the physicality of the league will help him, and I think that'll help him further down the line because he has undoubted ability, and we're all hopeful that he can actually go on and achieve what perhaps he should achieve in years to come, yeah.
Who else was kind of maybe unlucky not to get into the Toulon squad from League of Ireland?
Dan Mandrew can count himself very unlucky. Difficult to nail down a squad, obviously, and you've different options. You're trying to work out different kind of, okay, can we play him with him, etc. And he obviously was in the first two squads, the amateur, and in the game against Luxembourg at Tallinn in March.
What's he like?
As a player, technically outrageous. I think it's been well documented that some of the aspects of the defensive side of the game, which Keith Long and some of his Bowes teammates have alluded to.
Number 10s have to defend.
It's a misconception about a number 10. A number 10 years ago, traditionally, was a bit of a luxury player.
Floater on the pitch.
Physical stats now tell you it's probably the most aggressive position in the team, depending on what way you set up.
How do you explain that, most aggressive?
You set it physically. So in terms of the high intensity distance covered, right up there.
Look, Alan Brown at Preston would be a...
He's initiating presses, isn't he? He's the one that starts your press off. And he's
centre forward starts maybe on one of the centre halves, and then as soon as it goes to your own, bang.
And
then you set the tone, and then it goes ball over your head, back you get in.
But does that, like, I remember Berbatov's comment was, like, real quality doesn't always need to show effort. Like, does a number 10, is there a negative influence in his game if he has to work his socks off the ball?
Well, Messi might suggest so, yeah.
Yeah.
It was also a stat years ago that Van der Sar had more high-intensity run in one game than Berbatov. I'm not quite sure that was right.
Love Berbatov.
But like Dan Mandrew,
point, yeah.
Technically, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And again, going back to the points you made about coming back home, how he dealt with that. You've seen the interview last night when you did before the game with Shane. Brilliant. Looks at ease. Looks comfortable. Looks happy. If he continues to develop the way he is and he adds bits of those defensive parts to his game, which I think he has, I have to say, in the bits I've seen him from the last 3-4 months, then the world is his oyster.
Yeah, we had a question from Dan Dalton. Just be interested in the lads' views on some of the under-21 players playing in different European leagues. So I think you're talking about number 10s. I mean, Conor Ronan was your first choice number 10 as such, who played in Slovakia this year on loan from Wolves. I mean, I think Simon Power is in the squad as well. He's been in Holland on loan as well. I think he's come back to Norwich now. Yeah. But, you know, could you see some of those lads you mentioned thrive in European leagues as well. You know, I mean, talk about technically confident players that we have. And in Ronan, has he benefited from his experience, or is that just his natural style anyway?
I think you could put Brandon Cavan into that equation, Dan Mandrew without a shadow of a doubt. I don't know what it is. I don't know why we don't send more over, or they don't come and try and get
homeboys.
Yeah, I think there is an element of that and a little bit of a fear factor.
Money in England as well, to a degree, I think. Yeah, I mean, that definitely. Is
well, that's the ultimate
factor.
League to get into financially, isn't it? That's where everybody from around the world wants to get into the Premier League. Essentially, that's where they see as the almost the cash cow, and that's where it is. So that's why when a player gets in there and they're playing regular, whatever level that they're playing or whatever team they're playing at, if they're in the Premier League, they're probably earning way more money than they can get from playing in France or Holland or wherever it
will be. You could earn more money in League One than you might get in the top division in Holland.
Well,
The Netherlands League, though, if you take that as an example, and if you look at a club that has and takes an individual and looks at a long-term plan for them. So Simon Power, for instance, he's on a contract, whatever he's on, 2-3 year contract. They're parking up the first year in terms of that's a development year. He's going over to the Netherlands. He's going to mature. He's going to play games at a level that we think will suit him. And Conor Ronan's the exact same, because he didn't have a great experience when he went to Walsall on loan. And it probably didn't suit him, the way they played, the scrap they were in at the bottom of League One. But he goes, and again, coincides with being involved with the 21s. He was previously involved a little bit with the previous campaign under Noel King. But he goes over there, and again, it's confidence. Confidence comes back. He feels part of it, and he looks like a world beater at the moment. Yeah. He looks
I would say as well, I think when a player realises that they have to adapt the game, I think when you come through a system, you play a certain way, and even if I look at it in relation to how I would have been, when you're coming through a system, you're playing a certain way with freedom and expression, and you have to adapt to sustain a career. Realistically, you're never gonna seriously go and win trophies ever seen. It's not gonna happen. And I think when players come through a certain style of football and they're really progressive, really expressive, say a lad would leave the League of Ireland and go over to England, I think they have to adapt the game. And that is the ones who adapt who are successful, and the ones that can't adapt continue through the same things. Don't go on and be successful.
Yeah, well, we've seen some players go from this league. I mean, maybe someone like Graham Burke went to Preston.
How many times have we heard about him being unbelievable? I heard him being...
In training.
The best trainer that Preston has seen in the last 15, 20 years, or whatever it would be. And why has he not progressed? Why is he not playing? And I don't know why. Maybe he's not been able to do what Alex Neil would have been wanting from him on the training ground, on the pitch, and...
Well, it's funny you mentioned they have an aggressive number 10, Alan Brown. Yeah. And Graham Burke's ended up playing out wide.
And quite often, isn't on a full size pitch. It's more condensed, isn't it? So maybe the size of that makes him look, you know, he can cover the grass a little bit. Technically.
Just speaking, we were talking about lads going overseas. I mean, Neil Ferrugia was sat in that seat that you're in a couple of weeks ago, and he is very open-minded to travelling. Now, he's ended up taking the decision to join Shamrock Rovers, to stay at home and finish his education but play full-time at Rovers. Would you have spoken to Neil? Would you speak to lads about their futures, about their moves? And what's your sense of where he's at?
Yeah, I'd always be there to offer advice if they wanted. I'd never push it upon them. And it's not one cap fits all. I think it's different for every individual. And with Neil's case, I think he's made the right one, because education is clearly a big part of his life, the family, the background, and where he wanted. He's had offers before, didn't feel it was right. He finished his degree. Now he's bouncing on to finish his master's degree. So it was, what club should he go to? I think Bowes were in the equation of some description, where he maybe go there and it's a little bit more of a part-time in terms of training loads and all the rest of it. But he's a very intelligent fella. The offer will still be there in 12 months' time for Neil Ferrugia, as long as he continues his development. And it's Kev's phone, by the way, if anyone's interested. Irish one. Oh, speak of the devil.
We can't reveal who that call was from.
Sorry.
Neil, I'm a big fan of, and he's not like a lot of other players that we have. He's a powerful, strong, winger that is constantly improving.
I still haven't
his
seen
game.
Him. You've been on to me for a while. I've not the chance to watch him.
I was saying, like, young Kilvan in some respects.
Physically, definitely, and tall as weight and powerful. So he's obviously more intelligent.
On the ball or off the ball?
Clearly, yeah. Has he got a football brain, Keith? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I think we knocked the league a lot, but when you think about it, Ferrugia signed a new deal, Talbot signed a new deal, Mandrew signed a new deal. Jack Byrne doesn't seem to be going anywhere, to the best of my knowledge. McElhenney is here. El Buzetti is here.
We have a lot of the same. But
they're very enjoyable to watch.
I was having this discussion last night with someone that... there's a lot of the same type of players in the league at the moment. There's like a glut of good midfield players, number eights, number tens.
That's football now.
I know, they're everywhere. Yeah. Well, right, but it seems like at the moment, Rovers are looking for a striker.
Yeah.
Bowes are looking for a striker. Yeah. With Dinny Cork went injured, you can probably go down the league. I mean, Rovers have signed Graham Cummins from Cork. Mm. But I remember when Stephen Kenny got the 21s job, he was saying that the dearth of strikers and wide players at the age of 2021 in the UK at the moment, Irish lads, there was none, basically. I know it's a well-worn debate, but I mean, you've had a lot of under-19 lads in the 21 squad in those positions. Adam Ida, Aaron Connolly, lads. Yeah. Like, is this actually a problem? Like, that we're still struggling for those number nines, for those the real depth of strikers.
It's been an issue for years, isn't it? Probably the amount of strikers that we can call upon. But, like, if you go back to when we were coming through, it was always 4-4-2. So that was two strikers in every team. For the last 10, 12 years, it's only been one striker. So that's pure maths, that there's less of them. And we've gone through an era where everyone wants to be a number 10.
Yeah. Like the league is full of them. Like, you can go through or players like from Jack Byrne to Forrester, McElhenney, Sean Murray, you know, you can sort of reel them all off. There's a lot of them. So I think that's making some of the games very good to watch, because there's technically good players.
But, if you think
but there's a question about the levels of intensity of certain matches as well.
Yeah. But you say if you think of Robbie Keane and Niall Quinn, or like Shearer and Sutton, these partnerships, like the amount of strikers who've been disenfranchised because now they have to play up top on their own. It's a completely different role.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Completely different role. And it's like the traditional kind of lad who could score goals but not do a lot else. He's kind of like, even look at Mikey Drennan this season, like, you know, and granted Pats are playing sort of two up top at times, but a lot of these strikers, they're struggling to find an identity with so many.
Yeah, I watched him, you asked me about players in the league and things like that. Yet you don't actually see strikers making the runs to get across the near post and go and get hurt a little bit as well, go and score goals. Everyone's looking for pullbacks now. They're getting in wide areas, and it's a pullback, isn't it? It might be a midfielder that's arriving to score. It might be a number 10 that's arriving. But if a ball's fizzed across 6-yard box, you'll actually see balls so often played across. And I've noticed that when you're just saying that now, when you go and watch Pats, to be fair, a lot of balls put into really dangerous, and everyone's just waiting on that little pullback, ball, because it's a lot more of that type of goal that's been scored. Players arriving from the edge of the penalty area.
With those extra midfielders as well, you just made the point about all the number 10s and number 8s. We need to be careful, we don't get into it. It's just keep ball for keep ball's sake. And I think Ferrugia going into Rovers will definitely help. It'll give them a little bit more balance and maybe allow Jack Moore to not play on the left and drift in, and Trevor Clark having to be the one constantly providing the width, where Ferrugia, that will be another asset for them.
That was the one thing about Rovers last week against the Dock. They did dominate the game, but I thought in the first half they weren't necessarily really hurting them. They weren't really getting behind them.
But
and
they had one chance,
and Jack Byrne had a brilliant running shot from 25 yards that hits the bar. Like, they actually had a couple of chances late on, and funny enough, you mentioned Kavanagh come in. They actually had some. But yeah, there was no real explosiveness. There was no real pace.
But there are no pacey strikers hardly in the league.
You don't need pace to still threaten him behind. You just need to time the run right.
It's a help,
and even if it comes from one of the midfielders, it still disrupts the opposition back four, five, whatever it is, to make them think about it, not just have everything just in front of them so it's easy. You need to test them.
But that's it. Like, Dundalk played a fairly high line at times on Friday, and Rovers couldn't exploit it. But like, I spoke to our manager about this earlier in the season, and I was saying, geez, your centre backs wouldn't be the quickest. And he's like, well, tell me the fast strikers in the league. And I actually couldn't. Like, I think Romeo Parks is quick. Apart from that, like, Hoban's not quick. Aaron Green's not particularly quick. Drennan, not really quick. You go down, Parkhouse, not really quick. You go down to the hole, and then like the likes of Watford are obviously decimated now. They're looking for a striker. There's nobody. There's literally nobody there. Unless you pull some rabbit out of the hat.
It's like Daniel Kelly did so well for Bowes last year. Pace. On the right side.
Why did Connolly get his move to, you know, granted, obviously he had a good agent or whatever, but it was all about pace.
What's the kid that plays up front for Derry called?
Parkhouse.
Yeah, Parkhouse, sorry. I quite like him, though. So I like his movement. I like his ability to hold the ball. Very good with his back to play. Yeah, so he's one that you look at maybe there, that the player that could go and get goals because of his ability that he's got. But as you say, it's not necessarily all about having pace. It's about maybe just time your runs off a back four or five or whichever you're playing against. When they are prepared to squeeze against you, saying there's no pace, time you run, you're going to get in, aren't you? If that ball is actually, if the ball is being looked for, I don't think a lot of time you'll see balls actually players looking for that ball, looking to hurt. It's
so just want
to
keep it.
Keep the ball, yeah.
You've started to work with Stephen Kenny now this year, and he's someone that you wouldn't have worked with before. Could just ask you, how have you found the experience of working with Stephen? How did you feel when you got the approach? I don't know, had you met him socially in any circumstances before, and how have you actually found in actuality?
No, very unexpected. Got a phone call and asked to meet him. Went and met him and got on really well. And since then, I've loved it. I haven't enjoyed it. I've absolutely loved being back involved with the players and having a bit of a purpose to watching games, a real purpose, and trying to start the journey of qualifying and achieve things with that group that I have got a hell of a lot of belief in. I think I've told all of you separately about the younger players that I do have so much belief in what they can achieve. And in terms of working with him, I think it's constantly improving, and not just myself and him and the backroom team, the management team.
Jim Crawford,
we had Jim in here.
Yeah, Damien Doyle. All the medical side.
Do you feel as though you've got an influence as well? You know, a lot of the time managers will employ a coach and it's almost like you're just going in as a name to be there in many respects as well. Do you feel as though you've got an input?
Yeah, I wouldn't have taken the role if that had been the case. I think you know me well enough for that. I wouldn't just go to be part of the furniture. So again, it's finding that balance, isn't it? When you go and work with someone for the first time, what do you do, what do you not do? And I think for Stephen as well, like he's very hands-on, and I think for him at times it's probably a little bit, he needs to relinquish a little bit to let me do something, let Jim do something, you know. So it's getting that balance, and I think over the, like even the amateur trip where we had 3 days together, priceless, as in a trial run for us to go before the real deal and against Luxembourg in March. And then obviously we've had 3 weeks together in Dublin first, Johnson House, and then out to Toulon. So it's just getting that balance, and it's been brilliant. It's been absolutely brilliant. It gives me a lot of responsibility, and I relish it. Yeah, really, really enjoying it. Yeah.
Have you found the FAI have been fine? Like, they've answered your demands and all that in terms of what you
I haven't got too many demands, Johnny.
Yeah, like, I guess, like, you see, they seem to
balls,
be...
Balls, bibs and cones.
It must be an interesting dynamic. In fairness, Stephen is quite a unique character.
Yeah, he is. He's very unique, and I didn't know Stephen. I'd met him twice, I think it was, once at halftime of an Ireland game where we spoke for 20 minutes, missed the first 5-10 minutes of the half, and that was about it, really. And then you're constantly getting to know each other, you're constantly working on certain things, we get on very well. I think you might have to ask him, he might say something different. But he has got his very unique way, and I've worked in football clubs, I've obviously worked as a member of staff, I've also worked as a player under numerous managers, coaching staff, and he's very unlike any of the others. There's no airs or graces. He is real. There's nothing fake about him in an industry that is rife with people that are fake and up their own.
You can't help but like the way that he even talks people, you know. However, how he comes across, excuse me, is there's no waffle with him.
No.
There's no, I'm gonna say, shite. You know, there isn't. There's no, and that's what you like about him. And you know full well that what he's saying is what he's doing, rather than actually having a secret agenda every single time he's coming out to address.
It's quite refreshing, that though, isn't it?
Without a doubt, it is, definitely.
And it's very positive.
Like, and in terms of, discussion, like, because I think, you know, when he was the Dundalk manager and he was speaking about how he feels Irish teams should play and we should play, I think, like, it did sort of wind some people up in some ways, you know.
Because they didn't think we were capable of it.
Yeah. Like, have you had that discussion with him? I mean, is that something that you've seen, that he's very clear in this philosophy? Did you subscribe to that yourself, or did you have different views? And how does that work in terms of playing style? Your debate.
Look, I wouldn't be getting involved if we were playing Jack Charlton style football.
Yeah.
You know, but I have utter belief in these players. He has utter belief. And, you know, we work together to try and get them to a level and prepare them as well as we can. But you're right, he has an utter belief in how the game should be played. And I presume some people would have been a little bit annoyed and thinking, we're not capable of that. But I've always said it, our players are capable of producing more. They do it at club level. Why can't they do it at international level, regardless of the age, all the way up to the senior team? So I'm very much on that page.
Yeah, but I guess in Toulon at times you have to be pragmatic as well too. I mean, some of those, the Mexico game, the first Mexico game, like that was a grind.
Yeah.
And you had to adapt. As you mentioned the word adapting, you did seem to do that as well too in that tournament.
I think you have to pay respect. You can't just go out and play, you know, free football. Oh, don't worry about, like, defensively, I think we're a very solid team and that's constantly growing. You need the foundations in place. You need the structure of your team and how solid you are to give you that base to get a foothold in it, especially against better teams. Against Luxembourg, we knew if we approached the game in a certain way, they wouldn't be able to live with us. So defensively, as long as you're organised, you'd be fine. Against Mexico and Brazil and teams like that, and obviously when we get into the autumn, we're going to be playing Sweden and Italy. You have to pay those teams the utmost of respect, and we'll certainly be ready for it.
Just a question here from Conor O'Shea. We've sort of touched on this already, but for the two lads, what do they feel is the most important attribute, either physical or mental, for a League of Ireland player who's in the under-21 squad? It was a long question. If they want to make that step up to senior international level.
Physical or mental?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one or the other, which is it? Like, what?
It's both, isn't it? What percentage? I'm not too sure, but like if you touch on the lads that have come home from England as an example, mentally they have to be right to go again. So that first and foremost, that needs to be right. I think mentally, if you're right and you approach it in the right way and you're positive about it and you're enjoying it, then the physical aspect then comes, as long as you're mentally ready to kick on with it. So it's obviously a combination of both, but I think mentally you need to be right first.
I think as well we are still, just going back to what Keith said earlier on about producing players, everyone would always constantly say we've not got players playing in a certain level over in England now, we've not got players. We are still producing the same type of players we probably produced. Maybe different in the aspects of how our players produce themselves. We're not playing street football anymore. We know we're not doing that. But we are still producing players. It's just the net has got so much bigger across football in general. So we're still going to be producing players in 10 or 15 years' time. We're still going to have players around. But it probably is an element of how our boys have been coached and the mentality that's maybe been put into them from such an early age. You can't do this, you can't do that. And it's great to hear Keith talking along the lines of we can actually go out, we can actually go and play against teams, and we can actually go and beat teams. And we have to now, I think, in the next few years, get players with a mentality of that any side that's going to come into Dublin, they're going to get a game, and if sides are going to beat us, they're going to have to earn a victory. Because I think it's gone on far too long within our national side now, where in Dublin it's not really the place that it once was. And I think I'm hopeful that in the next 10 years we are going to get back to that sort of level.
But sure, we celebrated that victory in Cardiff when our performance was so anti-football, and it was we produced Liam Brady. Why can't, there's no reason we can't produce footballers of amazing technique. But it's somehow ingrained in people that, well, no, we've great spirit, you know, this Irish spirit. We have spirit. So do a million other countries. Like, we have spirit. Spirit's not going to get you over the line. You need players who can play. Like, just on the coaching thing, though, you mentioned that the teams look well coached there. There's such a dearth of coaches in Britain now, Irish coaches. Obviously, O'Neill and Keane, the latest two to leave Nottingham Forest. But that's a strange system as well, in that, like, there's no obvious pathway for Irish coaches necessarily over there anymore, and the League of Ireland seems to be a good nursery for them.
Yeah, very much so. And I think the level of coaching has obviously improved in the last how many years. And I think at times we're going to need to challenge ourselves to go. We're talking about players going to different environments to kind of better themselves and develop themselves. I think we as coaches need to do that as well. It can't just be over here. I think as a breeding ground and development in terms of getting yourself in, but you need to go and test yourself against different opposition. Like, well, for us being in the Toulon tournament, that was the most testing I've had as a coach, and I relished it, loved it. So in terms of that, I think you're right. But you need, for instance, someone like Stephen, who's has done what he's done at Dundalk, gets opportunities off the back of it. If someone like Stephen Bradley goes on and wins a league, there will be opportunities. So you're right, in terms of a breeding ground and for them and for their individual development, I think it'll certainly be there if the success happens.
Yeah, I suppose the European Games are a great opportunity as well, and this is a big month coming up now. And
will you take much interest in that, lads, in terms of how the League of Ireland teams get on in Europe? Because
if I can get to a game, I'll get to the game. If I'm around, I definitely will go to some of the matches. But definitely, I think there is interest in it. Of course,
they're home next Wednesday, aren't they?
Yeah,
it's Wednesday the 10th. Yeah, so it's Wednesday. Oh, this next Wednesday.
Wednesday week,
Pat's against Norrköping on the Thursday, and then Rovers are away and Cork are away. You know?
I think them games are always interesting because this notion of like Irish players not being technically good, like they're Patrick McElhinney against Rosenberg, what was that? 2 years
2017,
ago
now,
was
yeah.
the best player on the pitch. To my mind, a team that included like former Premier League players, yada yada, and you see that when they have a bit of time in Europe, when it's not as much kick and rush, that they're well able to play technically a lot of these players.
I think it comes down to I think it comes down to the belief that's instilled in Johnny. I really do. Like Sam Allardyce was a manager who I really enjoyed working under, but he wouldn't fill you full of confidence that you could go out and beat a Liverpool or a Manchester United. That was probably one of his downfalls, I felt, as he concentrated on the teams that were from 6th, 7th down. They were our games that we had to maximise results from. Whereas when you look at someone like Stephen, who I'm working with now, he instills belief in it. I had a story from one of his old assistants saying when he got to Longford years ago, it was a field. And he said, we'll be playing in Europe. And people were like,
you're crazy.
You've gone, yeah. You've
Longford
gone.
Longford were a laughing stock when he joined.
They got into Europe.
You know, interesting with that with Sam. I had Sam. Sam was my coach at 15 to 18, I think he was. And Sam instilled in me that I was just going to be a superstar from when I was a kid. You know, everything that I had physically that I had. And that was how it was with Sam. I think when Sam was at Preston, he had the manager like John Beck who was there who had started to introduce a stat style system, and Sam took on board everything that his statsmen were doing. And I think Sam changed his system from when he was at Preston working as a youth team manager under John Beck, and he's gone on had a great career. And I mentioned before about adapting, but I don't necessarily see that the Sam Allardyce that's been so good in getting keeping teams up and what he's done and what you've seen. I don't think that was the real Sam Allardyce, because Sam was an incredible technical coach when he was coaching at youth level, but really? I think he had to adapt.
But they just adapt to survive and stay in the game. I mean, he has survived. And do managers who are deemed to be more idealistic in their approach, did they get the same opportunities? There's this view now, like you go to Sam, he'll sort you out. You know, he'll get you through the season.
Keep you up.
There's almost a mentality inherent with that. You know, he'll do whatever it takes to keep you up. But,
I think it is, isn't it? I think that's what it is. He's probably gone against his own true principles, I would feel. And he's followed a system that works. How many times you're getting balls, you know yourself. Yeah. How many times you're getting balls into the penalty area. How many times you're hitting carrying games, second balls. Yeah. Everything like this. And that is how he's probably followed a system and thought, that system works, that will work to keep teams.
You've got the contrast of that where other managers are all about the product and how it looks and, you know, it's all about the perception of it, whereas the reality is, are you being effective with that type of style of football? But it's the way we play, and they build the brand around what they are.
Yeah, well, some of them need time as well. Someone like Stephen Kenny, I think, needs time. You know, you talk about him being a unique personality. He's not necessary. Well, actually, now the flip side of that is he went to Dundalk and Longford and places and turned things around very quickly, but. Do you feel that with the Irish job now, and he's obviously going from one job to the next job, that this idea, this succession plan, however it was, however it was concocted as an idea, that can you see this working? That his relationship with the players now, that they can see where he's going, that hopefully these young players now in the 21s are the senior internationals of the future.
It very much depends on what they do at club level. We've been kind of touching on it on different ones, haven't we, over the last hour or so, and it depends. You can only do so much as an international coach manager for that player. You can try and instill confidence, or you can be there for them, be at the end of the phone when you're with them, which is obviously very limited in the time you have with them. They need to develop at club level, and hopefully they can do that. If they do, then a lot of those under-21s, under-19s players will go on to be senior internationals because they are good enough. There's no doubt about it, but they need the opportunity and they need the mentality to be able to carve out a career.
I think as well that the mess that's been around the FEI for such a long time, it's only coming to the fore now, is we've had, and again, we maybe spoke about this privately, that everything has been gauged on qualification. So Stephen Kenny has to be given two campaigns. If we fail in the first one, it's got to be about the next campaign after that. And maybe
you know what
that.
The discussion is going to be like.
I know the way that football fans are going to think. If we're not at Euros then, or a World Cup or whatever it's going to be, then it's deemed a failure when it's not. We have to give him at the minimum two campaigns. He can't have eight games. He can't have eight games and eight sets of, what's it going to be? Probably 10 or 12 games, including friendlies across a year. And that's going to be actually dictate what Stephen Kenny's got. Well, the way we're going as a team, as we're going to be coaching our players, as we're going to be developing our players, it can't be 10 games. It has to be. It's got to be, well, I'd say minimum 25. So you're probably looking at three campaigns. But that's the way that we have to do it. That's got to be the model.
You have to commit to the plan.
It's got to be the model.
You're trying to change like years and years and years of not really playing.
But that's why we're in a mess, Johnny. That's why we're in a mess now.
Like how he can't turn this around overnight. Even
Mick, of course, that's why.
Mick, you can see Mick wants to play, but he's also pragmatic in that he has what he has in terms of players. So it's almost like he's like the interim thing where Kenny then will obviously try to bring a further brand of football. But you can't turn this around in the space of these crunch like one campaign.
No. That's why I made my point, John. Yeah. John, we're in a mess for a reason, and the reason has been it's just been instant success, get qualification, and then it's almost like we can breathe now. We can actually just start to just maybe survive for another year, another 2 years, whatever. But it has been about survival for when we were all involved in it. We didn't qualify for, you know, the famous game in 09 when we didn't qualify for the World Cup in South Africa. That was like, oh, end of the world now. What's it costing the economy? What's it costing the FAI? That cannot be the model. It cannot be the model.
Yeah, I'm always interested, well, does Mick keep a close eye on the 21s? And does he kind of, you know, because a lot of these players shouldn't be a million miles off the senior team even now.
No, which is probably a little bit of a scare factor for us come September.
Same
October,
for Tom Owen, Colin O'Brien. He's kind of
the exactly the knock-on effect.
You had the training match as well. Actually, what was that like?
It was brilliant
behind closed doors, but
and it was
Chatham House rules. Was, or can you reveal what happened?
No, not at all. I thought they spoke about it publicly. Our lads came in, having had a few weeks off, just trying to get them up to speed, balance it out, because the game was on the tours, because the seniors came back from their training camp in Portugal.
It's great that's been reintroduced as
isn't
well
isn't it
now.
I think it was around when you first got the 21s, was it?
My 21s would always beat the seniors, and when I was in the seniors we'd always get beat by the 21s. So it was just a standard thing how it was, but
from the second the players came in, the 21s players, it was all they were talking about,
really.
And so when the discussions happened, Mick asked for the game, and of course brilliant, delighted to play it. We just needed to be careful of, we were going into a tournament, we didn't want the lads, so we had to 45 minutes each, and the experience they got and the confidence I think they got from that they were able to play against the senior teams, against their heroes.
Connor Kearns apparently had a cracker in the second half.
Super game. Came on in the second half, Connor, and he's been magnificent the last few months. Was unlucky not to be in the squad in March, and he's bounced on. He's another one with a wise head on very young shoulders. But it was just a great experience for all of them to be part of that.
Was it physical?
Yeah, it was a proper game. Yeah. You know, we've played in those behind closed doors games, and sometimes they can become a little bit keep ball like, you just keep it. Whereas we used it as the game to get ready for China on the Monday. We were playing that game on the Thursday, day off Friday, giving them a bit of free time, and then we travelled on the Saturday. So we wanted to get up to speed, and
they wanted to impress the players they're playing against as well. It's just a natural thing. It's like when we play Astro against, and then the likes of Kev rocks up, everyone raises their game a billion percent, except Kev, whose game goes rapidly down.
God's sake. I get man-to-man Mark playing five-a-side. I'm like, lads, come on, just want a game of football
then
here.
Then he starts getting chippy with people, like, you know, he's the narkiest man on the pitch.
Is he?
Like,
I would have always been a Mark.
Stephen O'Donnell now would be every bit as bad.
We had that off the ball game.
Not at your level, but I'm a Mark.
We had the off the ball game for the Irish Heart Foundation. Kev spent the whole game chasing the referee around the pitch, giving him a go.
It's great to see that. Just one other thing about the coaches in Ireland, I find it strange. There's no coach's body, or there's no like coach's LinkedIn website where it's like, I'm available for a job, or here's my page, this is what I've done. Because there's so many coaches now.
Well, they're forming a manager's association.
Yeah, I think Keith Long speaking about that, wasn't he?
I think it'll be interesting, because there, you know, when you look at the 13s, 15s, 17s, 19s senior teams, that's a manager and assistant manager multiplied by 20. Mm. That's 100 coaches straight away.
Yeah.
And they have to come from something. And it's like, we don't probably talk enough about what coaches are really making a name for themselves at underage or people that could, because there are obviously a lot of promising coaches out
there's
there.
There's a lot of good work.
And you need
done.
Your pro to be in the Premier Division now as well. Like,
yeah, and then the Elite Day is out as well, because every, obviously, League of Ireland club is going to need one of those. But I think with these young players that are coming through, it's for a reason, that they've been coached better than we would have been at that type of age. They're more evolved, and then by the time they get to that stage, they're able to bring them on another notch. And it's credit to the coaches at that level that they're bouncing through. I think there's some outstanding coaches in this country.
The ladies' game as well. Obviously, Colin Bell has left. Lisa Fallon as well. We should mention got a job with Chelsea. Made the switch from Cork City, who had a pro license, one of the few I think at Cork. But the ladies' job, is that like an attractive job for someone now? In terms of. Obviously, Phil Neville, the kudos he's getting from the England role at the moment.
We were touching on it off air, weren't we? His profile has gone through the roof off the back of what he's achieved, and I think.
Does that matter in the men's game, though? Does some club think, oh well, it's the is there still the snobbery? Like, well, he might be able to.
I don't know whether it's snobbery, but I think it's just more on everybody's radar now, isn't it? The women's game, and obviously the World Cup will have helped massively with that. I've interacted on events and functions with the FAI over the last year or two with some of the women's senior internationals, and I'm the first to admit I didn't know the struggles that they'd had down through the years and the lack of profile the game has, the struggles they've had. And I think now it's getting to a stage where it's getting there, probably not as quickly as everyone would like, but it's certainly getting there.
I think there's a worry at the moment as well that we could actually go backwards with the women's game here as well, and I know we're going off topic a bit, I suppose, here now. Because of the troubles that we have within the FAI, it's important that we actually keep everyone on the same sort of path, because it has been raising the profile, as you say. The Women's World Cup now at the moment, if you've been watching it, I mean, it's the level of profile they're getting. Every newspaper now you're opening, you know, every sort of second ad that's coming on
that
TV.
That was never the case.
About next game, no.
It's going to be a huge growth area, women's sport.
It's a great opportunity, yeah. Definitely. And like, I mean, there's a lot up for grabs at the moment in terms of Irish football, and like you have.
And I'm thinking generally, it's not us sat here just looking, you know, just a PR thing, whatever it would be. I think there was a genuine interest of watching football and seeing how it's developed. Yeah. And I think you touched on Phil Neville there. Phil Neville now. I was talking to Phil before he got the job. I was talking to him at the World Cup last year. He felt as though he couldn't get a job. He was struggling at a bit of a crossroads, thinking, right, what am I going to do? Am I going to go back coaching? Am I going to go back trying to maybe work my way up in youth football? And he was offered the chance, and it's been great for him. And
good lad.
Yeah, good lad. Very good lad. Mm. Really good. I've known Phil since I was about 15. I used to play against him when I was a kid. So, good lad. Yeah.
What's your own coaching aspirations? Are you going to go down that road?
Kev.
Well, I've been down that road, and I've got none at the moment. No, and I don't.
Take the ladies' job. Kilban linked with
Ireland. No, I'll tell you what.
Kilban linked with Ireland ladies' job.
Yeah. Do you know? I could go off on a tangent. I'd spoke to Dan. I'd done an interview with Dan a while ago about it, and I was coaching at Hull, and I thought that's where I was going to be going through, and few personal problems at the time. I just wasn't maybe in a position to carry on after Nicky Barmby was sacked at Hull. And I had to get a hold of myself and start to maybe cop on a little bit and think, look, where am I going to go? And I just decided, look, I got a chance to work with the BBC. I got a chance to do stuff over here when I was working in here with there at times. I was working with TV3 and things like that. And I just thought, look, just follow that and see where it goes. And you know what? Now I'm happy with the flexibility it gives me. I love going to games. I love working at games. And I'm getting the chance to go and do things that I maybe didn't think I would be doing. So
yes or no? But, are you going coaching?
No immediate plans.
But you're not ruling it out kind of in the future?
No, I definitely wouldn't rule it out. And I loved it for the season I was doing it at Hull. You know, I was coaching the likes, who lads are up there, Robbie Brady. I remember what a buzz it was for me when I got Alan Brown over at 15 years of age, telling Nicky Barmby that we should sign him immediately and they wouldn't pay €2,500. €2,500 it was to sign Alan Brown. From Ringmahon Rangers.
That's crazy.
They wouldn't take it. Hull wouldn't sign him. And I was like, you're crazy. He's better than any of the lads we've got on our youth team. And then about a year or so later, he signed to Preston, and I'm delighted. And it was just little things like that. That's the buzz that you get.
We were at Preston when he got man of the match against Norwich, wasn't it? Wolves. You could actually, in fairness, you could see Alan Brown, his eyes lit up when he saw you. And you still, you obviously would inspire a lot of young players as well, because they remember you from your Ireland days, because you're obviously not that old. Yeah. But, you know, would you coach even underage a bit?
I think if I were ever to get back into coaching, it would have to be underage. I think that's the way it's got to be. I think you wouldn't necessarily walk into any sort of job if that's where I was going to go. But it did give me a buzz when I was coaching. It really did. Working with a lot of the lads when I was at Hull, I did enjoy it.
To Hull and back.
Yeah, there you go.
That's not very good, John. But we loads more questions. We're not really going to get through them all. Quite a few off topic ones as well. There's a couple of Leeds United ones for Keith. We won't be going there today.
Yeah, actually, you have two questions.
No, we're not. We're not doing that.
Do you hate Leeds? And or why do you hate Leeds?
We're not having that topic today. Rory Gilson, for Kilbane, Liam or Noel? I mean,
oh, that's a straightforward one, isn't it?
Oh, no, he's deliberating.
It's Noel for me.
Yeah, it's Noel.
No.
Phil or Gary?
Phil.
Julie. Neville.
Yeah. Sean O'Kelly, for Andrews, for Keith, as a former Bolton player, does teams who are in financial difficulty in England, like situations where they can't pay their staff, and you do hear about more of this in the Football League now, is that sort of a warning sign for any League of Ireland players thinking of going across as well, that you have to be a bit wary of the environment over
there? Type of club, Bury as well, being a prime example, just got turfed out their training ground for not keeping it up, didn't they? At Man City's old training ground, wasn't it?
Yeah, Carrington, yeah.
And you have to be wary of it, obviously, but so it's up to the clubs to keep their house in order. Mm. I think we've had it here in the League of Ireland years gone by. There was obviously big troubles where they seem to be now in the main. I know it's a constant struggle, but they're aware of what they have to do, how they need to keep their house in order. But it needs to be the right club that they go out, because we've seen, you mentioned McElhenney earlier.
Is it the right move?
And we've been speaking off air about certain players. It needs to be the right type of club environment that they can go to, rather than just, oh, they might get an extra few bob a week, because they'll be back as quick.
But it comes back to the agents and advisors as well, and people around you.
You probably were seeing a little bit on the social media last year. Luke O'Connell has just gone up to Celtic, and wherever he's going to be, whether he develops for us or not, we'll see further down the line. But he's been getting so much abuse on social media. He walked out of a club there where they haven't paid wages. The players would have been, the older players especially, under severe pressure. And I was seeing all the stuff like calling him a snake and all. It's like,
but a lot of football fans are complete idiots. Like, so you're telling me I'm in my job, haven't been paid for whatever, and I shouldn't leave that job or think about leaving that job. It's a job. Like,
and he's going to Celtic, and you know he'll probably get a good game time next season, and he's going to get a chance to go and progress. And it's just crazy. It is crazy.
Mm. We should look ahead to the weekend's games, John. Well, I just mentioned him because time is definitely against us here. We can't go for 100 minutes for the 100th episode, to be fair. On Friday, we've got UCD Finn Harps, battle at the bottom, Waterford St Pat's, Cork City Bows, Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers. Cork City Bows live on air. Johnny's not presenting, though. I think you've
been. Are you not, Johnny?
No, he's
been already.
Cap wonder. Oh, he's reporting.
Oh, are you?
Oh. Am I? What?
Ladies and gentlemen, there's a live insight into working with Johnny Ward right there.
The emotion.
I've a busy week.
Have you said yes to going to Cork without actually checking if you're available?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Going to Eddie Vedder on Wednesday. That's the next thing.
And I didn't mention Derry Dundalk because I think that probably, I mean, Cork Bowls should be interesting, but I think Derry Dundalk is the most interesting game of the week for me on Friday anyway.
Apparently for me, it's gone down to Cork. in fairness to Rovers, will be hoping that Derry really have to get something in that game. Dundalk are not going to drop points in many games at all. This is a game where they might.
Hang on a minute. Did you not say Rovers are going to win the league after about six games?
Ah, we don't go there on that, Keith. Keith, we're not allowed to go there on that.
Did you see that there was a banner in the away Cabin section Tealy last week aimed at Johnny Ward?
Honestly, he takes it so personal as well. He's put his neck on the line. He's put his head on the block. And Johnny, you've got to stand up for a man.
And it was a guillotine.
I said 100 episodes. For a man who puts it about, he hates being slagged off.
He does, yeah. Johnny, you give it. You cannot take it. You can't take it at all, Jenny.
I can take it to an extent. Well, but then you've changed the record, because I don't slag Dan at all. That's the thing. I don't get any humor out of it.
It's not in you. Like, you don't have it in you. It's an admirable personality trait.
I get no pleasure in the sadistic pleasure in the people struggling around you. You know.
You were ballsy. I'm proud of you.
I was wrong. Yeah. But Athlone against Wexford, just got to mention Limerick. Just disgraceful situation in Limerick, the way that club is being run. Players leaving now, left, right and centre. Despite which, they're banging there in the race for the top four.
Can they leave on freeze? Can they go on freeze now?
I think they've one player. They're playing Longford Town on... interesting as well. They actually played Shells last 1-0, but missed a penalty in that game. And I think Tommy Barrett was very frustrated after this. I don't know how he's keeping his wits about him at all. But Galway United against Shelburne. Fully expect Galway United, despite being third last, to give Shells a good game. Drogheda versus Cove Ramblers. Cabinteely versus Bray Wanderers. A bit of a derby game there. Athlone versus Wexford. Should mention, Dan, as well, I was up in Ballymena last week. I was going to get a Vox Pop. For two reasons. Pure laziness. And the second...
Another insight into working with Johnny Ward. But
I genuinely don't think anyone would understand any of the Ballymena fans. I've never heard an accent like it. It's absolutely insane the way they... It's a cross
between... I thought you didn't like slagging people off, John. But anyway, go on.
The Ballymena accent, it has a reputation, that particular... It's kind of a cross between like Scottish and like Belfast, but like... with a farmer type accent in between. Absolutely insane. Honest to God, look up the Ballymena accent. But not that notwithstanding, I was really impressed. There was like big crowd at the game. Loads of people in Ballymena jerseys. Really nice stadium. Two lovely stands.
I heard you talking about this last week. So I don't know where I heard you talking about it actually. But you were mentioning it about, you were obviously doing a little bit of research for
All Ireland League. David Jeffrey is obviously their manager. But very well coached team, and up next to them is Malmo, and obviously Pat Finlay was on last night. They've got Rosenborg Linfield next week, so a few big games for the Irish League clubs. But very impressed by the Ballymena showgrounds. Really, really impressed. We should mention again, we are celebrating our first episode, our 100th episode. We'll have a special prize of 2 Air Sport box tickets to Ireland v Switzerland. When is that on, actually?
September.
Yeah. For the best review on iTunes, referencing your favourite moment or moments over the 100 episodes, we'll announce the winner on Twitter this Friday. Who have you up next for the 21s? When is your
Armenia,
next game?
Armenia, and then Sweden away. Armenia and Tala.
When is that?
First week of September.
So because there's going to be a lot of interest in that campaign. I get the feeling that a lot of people will go to the games.
I'm looking forward to it. We've got a very intense few months, so we've played 6 games, September, October, November, so it'll be full on. Armenia at home on the Friday night, and then Sweden away on the Tuesday, which will obviously be tough.
Mm. Kevin, intense few months ahead for you?
Yeah, as ever, John.
Yeah. Are you going to the Galway Mayo game on Saturday?
I don't know if I am. I don't know if I think I need to be down in Wexford this weekend, actually. I don't know.
Wexford?
Yeah, long story.
Some gig.
No, it's not actually. Some man. It's actually a favour, but John, no, I don't think I can. I don't think I can this week. I'm gutted, actually, because I wanted to go. I don't know why it's been arranged there, but we're going well off topic there now.
Tell us more about Wexford. What's happening in Wexford?
Oh, no, I've just got to do something for a friend.
that clarifies that.
If you see Kevin Wexford...
Well, it's for Hunty. I'm going down for Stephen Hunt.
Actually did ring him during the show as well.
That makes sense.
He was at the game last night.
Hunty probably won a bit of profile for it. He's pub, Tides pub, so he's got something on on Saturday. So
you'd add him. He's on for a number of Preston or something. You wouldn't know.
That's probably true as well.
He could be up for anything.
He's rang me about 3 times now, so he's up to something.
Right, okay.
Thanks very much for coming in, lads.
No worries.
And best of luck with the 21.
Cheers, pal.
And thanks for listening. But there are limits to your life.